You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
All right, welcome to the Belief in the Magic podcast, as presented by LastWordOnSports.com, where you get the last word. I'm your host, Oscar Elieff. I'm here with Christian Holmes, and it's the first day after Game 7 yet again.
And everybody is feeling the despair of what happened last night.
Yeah, last night was a rough night defensively. I thought they looked quite good offensively, however, for the most part, when they deployed their actual offensive players.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of tough to see the third and fourth line playing in situations where you would think a coach would roll his first and second line to maximize his scoring chances and maybe cutting into a 3-1 deficit. It really tested my patience last night. I'm sure it did with many other people, including you.
Yeah, I thought the fourth line actually looked quite good. However, that doesn't mean you should be playing them that much when you're down by 2 goals in the third period.
I'm in agreement with that all the way.
Like, it's been a common theme, obviously, this season that they've been a little rough defensively. You really saw that with the Jake Gardner-Travis Dermott pairing, which are two players that I am quite fond of myself. I really like both players. I think they're both fantastic players. They, pardon me, they had a really rough night, and it was shown on that first couple goals there. But I also thought the forwards weren't as good defensively as they could have been as well. And I think that's been a common theme this season again. The defense gets blamed a lot. However, the forwards aren't as liable as they could be.
I agree. I think if you think about it, if you want to win the playoffs, it's not all on the defense. It's on the forwards. It's on the goalie. Like, Frederik Andersen stood on his head for most of the series. Yes, he let in a bad goal last night. But, and again, after what he did for the Leeds in game 5, you really can't be upset. And he's the only reason the Leeds were kept in game 6. If it wasn't for the fact that Babcock decided to pull him too early, I had a strong feeling that Game 6 could have turned out differently. And last night, honestly, if he's not making the saves he did when he needed to make them, the game would have been much further out of reach for the Leafs. So I do think, as you think, Oscar, that yes, you can get mad at people like Jake Gardner, Travis Dermott, for maybe not living up to the defensive potential that they had. The forward group didn't do the greatest. I think if there was a line that actually was pretty good defensively, I do like the fourth line there. But then again, the first and second lines definitely could have amped it up a bit. I think the third line is kind of like, I'm so-so with it. Because, like, you know what, as much as I'm disappointed about the way Lilian Nylander was playing in the regular season and in the playoffs to a certain extent, like, he was decent defensively, and for a guy that doesn't play center all the time, and did he...
And especially given his line mates. He's
yeah.
With Patrick Marleau and Connor Brown, and I'm on the flip side of that. I was actually really happy for the most part with him in the regular season. I think he just caught a lot of bad luck, and that's going to change for next season. He's not going to continue to shoot like 5% for the rest of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if he gets reunited with Matthews next season, that'll obviously help both him and Matthews. They just play so well together, and I am shocked that they played for the entire season apart from each other.
I am too. Like, I never really understood that. Like, I get trying to make one line more powerful and, like, just, like, spreading out your offensive diversity. But, like you said, like, they play well together, Matthews and Nylander. It makes no sense not to have them on the same line. But then again, I think a lot of people have been at Mike Babcock for the way he's been making his lines and the way he's been rolling them out. So maybe it changes next season because it like you said, he can't be adding a 5% shooting percentage for the rest of his career. He's too good. It's just me, when I look at Nylander, I look at the contract value of him, and I think of the Toronto's tight cap situation, and seeing some of the, like, the one goal he gave up in game two, I believe it was, where he just basically let the puck go, and the Boston Bruins forward, basically, all he had to do was poke it into the net, and it was a good goal. Like, that frustrates me. Because, like, if he's making, like, $1 million a year or something like that, I could live with that. It's a mess up. Things happen. But when you're making 6.9, I say 7, just to make it easy, you shouldn't really be making mistakes like those. And although he could play great for the rest of the series, you basically remember that one moment, especially if you lose, right? And that's basically what I see, and it frustrates me, and I'm sure to a certain extent it frustrates other people. Then, if you think about it, you can't really trade Nylander as is because you're not really going to get a lot until you get him playing on the line with Matthews.
I don't think you trade Nylander at all, honestly. Mm-hmm. I know we've had discussions about this before, but I think he's going to look like one of the better value contracts by the end of it. It's all up to what Mitch Marner's contract looks like. If he gets offer sheeted like all these insiders say he's going to, for too much money that the Leafs can't afford, at some point you just got to let him go. He's not worth breaking records over. Mm-hmm. He's a fantastic player, but he's not worth the highest contract in the league. He's not worth the highest winger contract in the league. At some point, you gotta be fine taking the money and taking the four first-round picks and then maybe going after, like, an Artemi Panarin or an Erik Karlsson in free agency.
See, I'd be down with that. And, see, when I wanted to trade Nylander, the whole point to trading Nylander was to get a couple first-round picks or something so you can just get a player that's similar to him in the draft. And then have that player for 3 years under an entry-level contract that can fit in with the salary cap. And I don't know if anybody's going to offer sheet Mitch Marner as much money as these so-called insiders are saying. Because that is a lot of money to throw at one player.
I don't buy it. And offer sheets rarely ever happen anymore, too. So, mm-hmm. The last one that was actually signed was in 2013 by Ryan O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. And it was Colorado that matched it. And it was with the Calgary Flames. That was 6 years ago. And one hasn't been signed since.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I don't think the only reason to offer sheet Mitch Marner at this point is to try and screw over the Leafs cap. I don't think you're actually trying to get him with that. If you want to actually get a player, I think you offer sheet Kapanen or Johnsson.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Because I don't see the Maple Leafs giving Kapanen or Johnsson more than like $3 million a season because they can't really afford it. And that's on the higher end too. So that's definitely, if you want to get someone from the Leafs, those are the players you take a crack at.
Yeah. Back to Mike Babcock. If he was not, he did not have a great night coaching last night. And that's been sort of a theme throughout the season. Unoptimized forwards. The defense was rough with between Hainsey. Zaitsev had an okay game for Zaitsev standards. Yeah, and just not using his stars enough between Austin Matthews and the John Tavares lines when you're down by a goal. And even the power play units, you saw it. I know a lot of people are frustrated with the power play usage. It's like, why front load your top power play unit only to play them for 1 minute and give your second power play the same time? Like, why not just go all in with that and try and get the goal and, like, give them a minute 30 on the power play if you're front loading it?
I'm with you on that. And I have a little conspiracy theory about why this is happening. I kind of think that there might be a rift between Babcock and Dudas. So Babcock is intentionally doing this stuff to really frustrate Dudas. And maybe Babcock doesn't want to be there anymore. Maybe he wants Dudas to fire him. He's like, come on, man, I'm giving you every reason. But if not, I honestly don't know what he's thinking. But back in 2011, when Detroit was in the playoffs, there were instances when they were playing in like the first round where Mike Babcock would be down the goal with a minute left in the game, and he'd have Patrick Eads on and not be playing like a guy like Pavel Datsyuk. And when Patrick Eads is getting the same amount of ice time as Pavel Datsyuk, you know there's something up there. So I don't know. I just think it's silly and clumsy.
Real galaxy brain shit right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, honestly, and a lot of people have been talking about firing Babcock. I've been one of his defenders for a long time. Probably longer than I should have been. But at this point, I get it. I think for sure DJ Smith has to go, and whether it's by firing him or some other team picking him up by head coach, which I think Ottawa was rumored at thinking about, it's like, why do you want to pick up the guy who's in charge of the Toronto Maple Leafs defense and penalty kill? Like, those are the two worst aspects of the roster right now. And I don't know. And yeah, Babcock's usage is questionable. And it's not just last night. Like, throughout the season, Austin Matthews averaged 18:33 of ice time game. And while being third highest among forwards, it's still not enough for... And John Tavares was second highest with 19:05. I still think those guys can be playing plus 20 minutes a night, 20, 21, 22. You don't need to be playing your third line. Yeah, Per Lindholm averaged 11:27 a night. You don't need to be playing those guys for more than 7 or 8 minutes tops.
I'm with you on that all the way. To me, it's frustrating. I think, obviously, Babcock likes to try to roll out his lines and make them sort of even, if that makes sense. But like you were saying, like guys like Matthews and Marner and the guys like that, they should be getting at least 20 minutes a night. Like, they're your top guys. They're paid the most. They do the most for you. And especially in the playoffs when you're like struggling, like, you need those guys out there so they can go out and at least give you some offense or at least get the momentum flowing. Like, your third and fourth line, they should be getting played, no question, at some point, but not all the time and not as frequently as they do. It's very annoying, and it, like, as a fan, it pisses me off. As somebody that sees it from like more of an impartial thing, an impartial place, I don't understand it. Like, if you have all those good players, why in the hell are you playing your third and fourth line that much? Like, you're not going to hurt and have to use, like, giving him an extra 2-3 minutes a night. He's a workhorse. He wants to play. So do guys like Marner. So it doesn't make sense. Would I fire him over it? Maybe not. I think the most mature thing to do would be to sit down with him. If I'm Kyle Dubas, and just say, hey, Mike, we love you, but we hate how you're utilizing the lines and the lineup. Can we fix this? You know, can we figure out a way to work through this? And, like, I know Babcock is stubborn and a lot of people hate him for that. But you know what? It takes a lot of, you know, courage and balls to sit down and say, hey, I don't want to fire you. I want to work this through with you. But, you know what I mean? I think that might be something that would rub off on Babcock nicely. And it's not...
Go ahead. I don't think you maybe fire Babcock like this offseason. I think you definitely have him on a tighter leash, though.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, talk to him and keep an eye on him. If it's really like same shit next season, maybe it's a mid-season firing. And if it's seems like it's getting better, but then like not by much, maybe it's end of season firing, or if it's another disappointing season, I think you should definitely be considering firing him right now. Yeah. You just don't, maybe not outright fire him at this time. But if they do, they definitely have Sheldon Keefe as an option. Dubas has hired him. So Keefe is coaching his second team right now. Dubas has hired him both times. And I think Keefe has been a great coach. He still has some of the Kirk's, like some of the stuff that Mike Babcock does with having players that he likes to play that he probably shouldn't. But I feel like at this point, every coach has that. It's just, at this point, Babcock just isn't seeming to change, and you need to see that from him.
Yeah, and then I agree with that 100%. And, you know, I think even if your conversation's more aggressive with him, at least he knows that back in the back of his head, like, if you keep this up, dude, you're gone. And like you said, every coach has those tendencies to play players that you think that shouldn't really be played, but they are. Like Patrick Marleau is a perfect example this year. And I think in that case, another thing you could do as a GM, if your coach isn't going to listen to you, is maybe try to get rid of those said players. Like,
yeah,
I know,
just moneyball it.
Yeah,
like,
just,
yeah.
Just like the, like, screw you. Yeah, you know what I mean? You're not playing like this guy.
In Moneyball, it's like, I'm playing this guy on shortstop. It's like, no, you aren't. It's like, yes, I am. You can't tell me what to do. It's like, no, you're not playing him. I just traded him.
I'd love to see something like that, because then Kyle Dubas can, like, assert his dominance. Because I kind of have a feeling that if Lou Lamoriello was still with the club and Lou said to Mike, well, get your shit together or you're gone, Mike takes him more seriously than maybe Kyle would be taken.
Oh, no. I think Lou and Babcock have sort of a similar mentality, though. Like, mm-hmm. Lou is the man that signed Zaitsev to the 7-year deal.
Mm-hmm. So, it does make sense that they might think the same way. I don't know, though. To me, I think it's a challenging situation. But like you said, ride it out. See what happens. Like, you can't just, like... Like, the Leafs 4 years ago, before he came, were total garbage. Now, at least, there's a team that you can at least look forward to and expect them to make the playoffs. So
yeah, and he was really good during the rebuild. Like, even though they finished last place, they were a positive possession team, which is something that you usually wouldn't see from a last place roster. And from 2014-15, the year before they had Mike Babcock, and 2015-16, the year that they got Mike Babcock, despite finishing worse in the standings, they went from fourth last to last. They actually finished with more points from 68 to 69. And like I said, they were a positive possession team. So he did well coaching a roster like that, despite having absolutely no skill. So the structure was there in the early days. He just honestly, they couldn't score. They were meant to not score, basically.
Yeah. So like I kind of like Babcock to a certain extent, and like I think defender, and I honestly, there, if you're in the media, you got to look at it this way. These coaches are making millions and millions of dollars. It won't hurt their feelings to call them out on certain things. It's your job, you know. And like with me, I thought it was clumsy what he did, but then I know like there you don't get much better than Mike Babcock as much as people might think that's untrue. Like his accolades.
I feel like he is a little overrated when he was being called the best coach in the league. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's as true as what might have been once thought. I definitely wouldn't mind a coach with a more progressive mindset and the ability to play your stars a lot more and maybe rest guys down the stretch. Like, there's no reason that Ron Hainsey's playing like over 80 games a season. There's no reason that should happen, and also no reason he should be playing on the first pair. I don't care that he plays the right side and Jake Muzzin doesn't. 100%, I can almost guarantee that Muzzin would be better on his offside than Hainsey is on a comfortable side. And they're both left-handed D, mind you. There's no right-hand advantage to having Hainsey on the right side.
Yep. And I agree with that. It just goes back to him having his favorites. And I think you pull a money ball move there if you really want to see that stop. But it's frustrating because...
But like, yeah, you shouldn't have to pull a money
ball. Yeah, you shouldn't. That. You should just say to him, like, we don't want that. We need you to do this. But I don't think... I think Mike Babcock's just that type of guy that's like, I don't care what you want. It's I'm the coach, you're not, right?
Yeah. And speaking of defense, it seems like Jake Gardner might have just played his last game as a Toronto Maple Leaf. His contract is up after this season, and it does not... Like, they've been in very preliminary talks about an extension earlier this year, but it doesn't seem like anything's going to get done. It's not feasible to keep him for as good as he is. Just the way the cap is going to be for the Leafs this year.
Yeah, and it's an unfortunate thing, because as much as we like to make Gardner the scapegoat for the last two games, 7 losses to the Boston Bruins, he does bring...
He's been fantastic in the regular season.
He has.
He's a very good defenseman. When he makes his blunders, though, it's like... It's more obvious. However, he just he's so good at, like, in the offensive zone and drives possession in your team's favor and is good at that kind of stuff. And it'll be a pretty big hit to lose him and unfortunate to lose him.
It will be. And I don't think you replace him unless a guy like Rasmus Sundin comes up and he plays better than him. So it's really sad to see him go.
And yeah, it seems like the lineup will be Riley and someone. Maybe shift Dermott onto the right side and have Callie Rosen fill that third pair left D. And so it's Riley, Muzzin, Rosen, and then have Dermott on the right side.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of that line. And then maybe, you never know, maybe you take somebody up in free agency, a nice a nice signing, nothing too pricey, but like a budget buy type thing. A bargain buy, sorry.
Yeah, like, I'm not fully sure who they would bring in like that. I know there's a couple guys that I would love for them to trade for, but I don't think a trade's honestly likely at this point. I don't think it's worth it between what you could get in free agency and what you have in the system. I think you just sort of roll with losing Gardner and try and accommodate for it as best you can and see how Timothy Liljegren plays for the first part of the regular season in the AHL and maybe bring him up.
Yeah, I think that's the game, though. I think that's the game they got to play. They got to stay within the system. And that's why I say, like, drafting is so important for the next little while, because those guys that you draft are going to be the guys that you develop to come in and replace guys like Jake Gardner, which you unfortunately cannot afford to keep. So I'm just disappointed that he's going to go, and I'm even more disappointed about the loss last night, because, like, in my opinion, the team is going to be slightly worse on paper next year than they will this season. This was their year.
They'll have to pay their stars. I don't think like any windows are going to close for them, because they're obviously still going to have a very good team. Mm-hmm. But like, if they have a better regular season, it'll be just better luck down the stretch, or actually winning some of the games they should have won this season. I don't think they'll have a better roster, sheerly because they'll be losing Gardner and possibly Kapanen or Johnsson because of contract situations or whatever. But overall, I think it will be a mildly worse team that they will be icing just because of that.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. Like, I don't think they're going to be, like you said, terrible. It's just on paper a little bit. If you're looking at it and you're just like a normal fan and you're just like, you see the names that you had last year, then the names that you'll have next year, it'll be like, could be better. It's not terrible, though. And, like, if you think about it, teams like Tampa Bay are going to lose some players. They're going to be teams that are going to be in the same situation as you. So it's not necessarily, like, just all you. Like, I think when we talk about Toronto, it's Toronto-centric. We don't really think about the rest of the league and the rest of the Atlantic Division and how it's going to shape, though. So, yeah,
like, everyone's worrying about the Mitch Marner contract, but players like Braden Point, Patrick Laine, Mikko Rantanen, and lots of other RFAs are up and will be commanding just as much money, or maybe not quite as much, but like Point had a 40-goal season and needs a new contract on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Like, that's, mm-hmm. unless they can trade like Ryan Callahan, that's going to be a tough contract to get unless he takes a discount like everyone else on Tampa does. Yeah. So honestly, it might not be that hard.
Yeah, I don't think there's stage tax there either. So yeah, like,
that's why everyone's
takes a discount, because like, if you think about it, if you come to Toronto and you get like $10 million a year, like really you're more so getting like $8.99 million once you get all your taxes over with. There, like what you get is what you keep. Same thing in Vegas too.
Current RFAs this season are going to be Mikko Rantanen, Mitch Marner, Braden Point, Sebastian Aho, which will fetch a lot of money. He had a phenomenal season. Matthew Tkachuk, which is going to be a rough one, I think, for Calgary. They don't have a whole lot coming off the books this year, and they have a lot of their cap being spent. So that's a guy you might want to bridge in Calgary. Timo Meier, Brock Besser, Patrick Laine, and some others, like There are a lot, and I don't know why people are thinking that offer sheets are going to come exclusively for Mitch Marner. I think if teams were smart, they'd maybe ride up the price on Matthew Tkachuk, Braden Point, Patrick Laine, and see what they can get. If teams are actually thinking about offer sheeting, which I'm still not fully sure they are.
Because it's a lot to offer sheet, because like with any of those guys you just named, you're at least looking at like 3 to 4 first round draft picks.
Yeah, of course. Plus paying them like $10 million.
Yeah, which is big. That's a huge salary cap hit. So even if the cap does go up like every season, it's still a big hit.
Yeah, of course. Now, looking at maybe moving off the Leafs a little bit, what do you think about the other series going on? Lots of upsets this year between Tampa, Nashville, Nashville and Dallas, Tampa and Columbus. Possibly, depending on tonight, Carolina, Washington, Islanders and Pittsburgh, despite Pittsburgh actually being lower in the standings. They were favored to win by a lot of people over the Islanders. What are your thoughts on this year so far?
I thought it's been pretty entertaining. Like, if you're just like a fan that doesn't have a team in the playoffs, and you're just more so watching for good games and good storylines, like, how can you not like Columbus's storyline, where they basically fought tooth and nail to get into the playoffs, beat out the Montreal Canadiens, and then they come in, they sweep Tampa Bay, and now I think, no, they're the 8th seed, so they don't have home ice advantage against Boston, but still, they're going to the second round, and I like their chances against Boston, so that's going to be an interesting series. Like Carolina, like Don Cherry's going to have a heart attack if they win, bunch of jerks. And then, like, I love how Dallas came and beat Nashville. I think Dallas is a little bit of a sleeper, even though they're going to have to play St. Louis. Like, if they can get...
Well, they have that nasty top line of Ben, Radulov, Sagan, and, like, a likely... Like, at least a Vezina finalist and Bishop, who had an incredible season, and I did not realize that until a few days left in the regular season. Like, he did not get talked about enough in the regular season. It was all about Robin Leonard. I brought up John Gibson a lot. I think he suffered from being on possibly one of the worst teams, with exception to Ottawa. I think on any other team, he would be recognized as the best goalie in the world right now. And Frederik Andersen was tossed around a lot. Andrei Vasilevskiy, who was on that monstrous Tampa team, of course. Bishop just didn't get talked about enough.
No, he didn't. And he deserves credit for what he did and what he's doing now. I definitely like Dallas as a sleeper team, and I think that'll be a fun series, Dallas and St. Louis. And, like, either any team that wins there, hey, you're happy with it, because they're both good teams. St. Louis, like, they had a terrible start to the season, but, like, their 2019 portion of the year was really good. So, you never know. And then, yeah, like,
there was that phenomenal San Jose's Vegas game last night.
Oh, that was so awesome.
Such an entertaining series, and so entertaining, such an entertaining final game. That the fact that they scored 4 goals on that power play, and whether you think that should have been a 5-minute major or not, you can't let 4 goals in 5 minutes, even if you're killing off a penalty.
That's true.
And I had San Jose picked to go to the finals and lose to Tampa, but I think whoever won that series, which it ended up being San Jose, was going to win the West. And I still believe San Jose will win the West, despite having Martin Jones in net, who I'm still shocked that they didn't get a goalie at the deadline, like even like Jimmy Howard, who had a pretty good season in Detroit. But yeah, and some of the second round matchups are going to be fun to watch. San Jose, who are they playing again?
I think they're playing. No, not Dallas.
Colorado. Okay, so they're playing Colorado.
Yeah, that'll be a fun series.
That should, I mean, like I said, Calgary should beat Colorado, but so should San Jose there. Mm-hmm. But honestly, who knows at this point?
It's just a toss-up. Like, nobody really plays by records anymore. It's just, you know, it's game by game, period by period. Anything can happen.
Yeah, and here's... I'm really hoping that Carolina will win tonight. I had them going to the Eastern Conference Finals. Mm-hmm. I think they have such a good roster in front of them. Rough goaltending still. That's still an area that they need to figure out, despite that being the area of issue for the past so many seasons. Mm-hmm. But they have probably... a top three D-core, if not the best, and a forward group that is good but could probably still be optimized a little more. Like, you want to see Andre Svechnikov play a little more than he is, because he's currently being used on the third line, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, it's... And they... are the second best possession team in the NHL in the regular season. They just couldn't quite finish and score their goals. Like, they had a good expected goal share. They just couldn't put the puck in the net for some of the games.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their biggest issue. But everything they do is fundamentally what you want to see. Oh, right. Svechnikov is out injured right now.
Because he got basically killed by Ovechkin in that fight. That was a nice right hand. Don't think he should have done it, but still, that was a one heck of a knockout.
Yeah, so I think they... Yeah, and their D of Slavin, Hamilton, Pesci, Falk, DeHaan, and Van Riemsdyk is such a good group of defensemen. I think that they should be able to beat the Islanders if they make the second round. I would... Yeah, I said at the start of the playoffs, I'd take them over any Metro team at this point.
Mm-hmm. They are a pretty good... Yeah, I'm with you on that. They are a good team. I hope they can get past Washington tonight. So, it'll be fun to watch. Like, as much as I'm bummed out that the Leafs are gone, and in the same old fashion, you know, now that they're gone, I could be more impartial and just enjoy the hockey I'm watching. This is the best time of year if you like hockey, because you never know what's going to happen. And
if you are a Leafs fan and you're bummed about the Leafs being out, the Marlies are currently in the playoffs and are up 2-0 in their first round series. And tonight, Rasmus Sandin and former line mate in the Sioux, Mac Hollowell, are being reunited. And they will... that should be an interesting rest of the series. The Marlies had a bit of a rough go there for a while, but it was mostly attributed to goaltending. I'm not sure what they're doing for goaltending right now, because Sparks was off doing training and Hutchinson was called up with the Leafs. So I'm not sure if they'll get Hutchinson back, but they are looking a lot better, it seems, than the start of the year.
Mm-hmm. That was a rough start to their year, but then again, like they got, like you were saying earlier, they got a great coach in Sheldon Keith, and they had some good players, like Jeremy Draco is doing great. They have like Rasmus Sandin, Timothy Liljegren. It's not like team's garbage, and they're definitely a team that has experience. They won the Calder Cup last year, so it'll be fun to watch them. Well, I don't know if we can exactly watch them unless they're like on TSN or Leeds TV or something. Because I don't think a lot of people
want. I've been considering getting AHL TV myself to watch Sandin and Liljegren a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I was unable to watch them too much this year because of school.
Same here.
And unable to watch the first two games because I've been moving places, so that's been a heck of a ride.
Yeah, I could imagine.
Yeah, but now that I'm all done exams and all settled down, it should be pretty good. I'll be excited to sort of... I might tune in tonight, try and watch the game. If I don't for this game, I'll definitely tune in for game 4.
Yeah, I'm feeling the same way. And if worst comes to worst, I think you can just listen to them on the radio or something, so it's not the end of the world. Yeah. Same thing. If not, you just envision it in your head. So I'm excited to see how they'll do. Like, I like that team a lot. And I'm just, even if they don't do great, hopefully that Rasmus Sedin and Timothy Liljegren and Holloway, they all have the good postseasons and they all get some valuable experience.
Yeah, it's definitely a worse team than they had last year. But last year they had the AHL Goalie of the Year. They had stacked defense with Travis Dermott coming back down. Callie Rosen playing incredibly. They had Trevor Moore still, Andreas Janssen in the playoffs. Lots of other players.
Mm-hmm. Team has definitely taken a hit, but it's interesting to see how they can handle that adversity of not having as great of a team as last year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I think that'll wrap up this episode. Unless you have anything else you want to touch on, Christian?
I have nothing besides I'm pissed off about what happened last night. That's about it. And thank you for watching or listening, whatever.
Yeah, so we'll try and get back on this. As stuff happens over the summer, we'll try and do either draft preview or draft review podcast. We'll do one post-free agency. Try and do one if there's after any trades that might happen, after any possible firings or hirings, hint, hint. And yeah, we'll see how the summer goes for the Leafs. It should be an interesting one between the RFAs they have to sign and some possible fixes they have to go about.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting, and we look forward to the next episode that we will have, and hopefully you keep looking forward to listen to us. Thank you for listening today.
You're tuned in to Last Word Radio. Last Word on sports.com. And that is the last word.